Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Red, where you at? Red. Hello. What's up, everybody? This is Brother B from the menu. See, I think my partner, my co-host, my cousin, is having technical difficulties, so please stand by. And once again, what up, Brother B and Big Red. From the menu, Blog Talk Radio. How y'all doing? Hope all is well with everyone. Yeah. That's right, Red. Call back in. You're disrupting the show. So you know we got to drag her through the mud when she come on. She's throwing off the whole vibe of the show right now. Hope all is well with everyone. See, we got a caller on right now, 8704. How you doing? How you doing? Hope all is well. And let's see here. Well, once again, while we wait for Red to call in. Yeah, we have a nice show tonight. A topic that we've been wanting to tackle for a while. You know, the issue of mental health, not only just in this country, but all over. And even more so, something more personal, you know. Mental health in the black community, even though it's in every community right now, you know, somewhere along the show, it has to be addressed because you know how we do, you know, the menu, equal opportunity, and we make sure, you know, everyone is included, not trying to have anyone, you know, feel like they're on the outskirts. But yeah, guest calling number is 347-324-3395. That is 347-324-3395. You can catch us on Instagram at the menu, Mind Your Mental, MINDURMENTAL. We're also on Facebook, the menu, Mind Your Mental, same, MINDURMENTAL. And yeah. You know, check us out. You on, Red?
Yep. Yeah.
Yo, you know, you got a lot of nerve. How you ain't got your stuff together? This is a topic you've been wanting to do for the longest, and you ain't got your stuff together.
Oh, I had a tech issue. Quiet. Quiet.
Did you have a tech issue, or were you indisposed and you forgot what time we were starting?
Maybe both.
Because I know we started. A little of both. All right.
A little of both.
Yeah,
I had both going on there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know we're starting a little early tonight because, you know, once again, you know, this is one of these topics where, you know, you want to kind of get everything in as much as possible. We don't want to run too far, you know. Past, you know,
right.
Certain hours because, you know, people do have to, you know, do things, you know, in the morning and stuff like that. So, like I said, we started the show early. You know, we want to make sure it's, you know, we cover a lot of bases as much as we can. But, yeah, what's going on with you, Red? How you doing?
I'm chilling. As usual, chilling. Just trying to maintain in this world we live in with, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I got you. I got you, man.
How's everyone else doing?
Yeah, you know, I'm chilling. And, you know, for the most part, I mean, really can't complain. Like I said, you know, I'm you know, I don't mean to seem like I'm there, but I'm not there. But like I said, we've been wanting to do this topic for a while, and I have questions. but at the same time, I'm more so, like, ready to, like, listen. And, you know, Miss Sherry Ann Beth, you know, me and her had a conversation, chopped up a little, you know, the other day. And, you know, she sounds amazing. And I'm, like I said, I'm really, you know, ready to listen and, you know, get, you know, get some information. Because one thing that we, that's like that whole scarlet letter or taboo thing is like mental health. But once again, when it comes to us, you know, it seems like it's, you know, it's a whole issue of like, oh, I ain't crazy. But it don't have anything to do with being crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like people just automatically think because, you know, they hear mental. Yeah,
well,
exactly.
That's the stigma that's put out there with, you know, not to cut you off, with our people, as usual, that's what, you know, our people are always the ones, oh, I'm not crazy, I'm not this, or cousin so-and-so is not this, that, no, no, cousin so-and-so is, and cousin so-and-so needs help. Or aunt so-and-so needs help, and y'all not getting that person any help, and they should have been getting that help from years ago, but, you know, people don't want to be labeled, or they don't want their family to be labeled. But go ahead. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Yeah, nah, no, you're absolutely right. Like I said, there's misconceptions, you know, when it comes down to, you know, the thing of mental health. And I just want to, like, dispel some of the myths. And I know, you know, Miss Sherry Ann Beth is going to come on, and she's going to do that. And I'm looking forward, you know, to a good show, especially, you know, one of the things that I really want to tackle, but one of those questions that I really want to ask, you know, of course, it's going to come up. It's like, you know, the pandemic, you know, what did that do, you know, for us and to us, you know, as a people, like, what did it really do? And, I mean, cause you know, some of us can see, you know, we can see some of the side effects, you know, of what happened, you know, throughout the whole pandemic, but there's some things that we don't see. There's some people that, you know, are very reluctant to talk or not deal with the issues at all. You know, they don't think anything's going on, but, you know, in all reality, there's something is going on. And, you know, that's it, man. I hope, you know, we can have a nice open forum and, you know, talk about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So, yeah, well, what did the pandemic, you know, what are some of the things that, you know, happened during the pandemic and, you know, how that affected people mentally, you know, a lot of financial stuff as well. And that can impact you, you know, mentally. That's how I feel. Because, you know, people lost their jobs. Some people were breadwinners of the family where, you know, that person went out and worked, whether it's man or woman, and they basically were the breadwinner. And then when, you know, pandemic hit, and then that person couldn't work for number, you know, for the whole year or months or whatever, of course, that affected the whole family mentally. Because then it's like, how are you going to eat? How are you going to pay rent? Then the other person may not have certain type of skills or what, you know, it depends on what the family dynamic was. And then guess what? You know, if there's no money coming in, then that weighs on the family.
Nah, so you're so right. You're absolutely right. Like I said, there's so many questions. And it's not like, you know, we they can all be answered, you know, within the amount of time that, you know, we're going to do what we do. But, you know, hopefully, like I said, we can get to the, you know, the bottom of a couple of things, man. You know, I mean, of course, you know, the next thing on our plate is this whole issue with, as we were talking about last week and even Hot Rod was talking about yesterday, touching base on the whole Russian and Ukraine thing. And, you know, the more I kind of read certain things on it or check it out, I mean, it really seems like, I don't know, man. War is never a joke, but this really seems like it's, I don't know, man. It's
in terms of, well, it's not a, Well, in terms of it being, you know, it's not a joke, but people are, I hate to say this, and I'm going to say it, and okay, people are over, like you're overreacting. You're talking about, you know, they want World War III. It's like, just be easy. Like, stop putting stuff out there. And, of course, that weighs on a person's mental, too, because you have people that are thinking things, and then we already have a society of paranoid people as it is. So here you go, once again, social media. You're looking at all this stuff on social media. Like, a friend of mine, she put up some map that she found from somebody talking about, oh, this is where they're targeting. Take that stuff down. Like, what are you doing? That looks like somebody went on the computer and made that stuff. Like, you don't know what's going on about how they targeting this. Like, stop it. What you're doing is just, you know, once again, you're putting stuff in your mind that's not even there yet or even happened. So yeah. That, you know, like I said, I understand it weighs on a lot of people's mind, and especially a lot of these young people, because guess what? They ain't never been in no war. This is the first war they even know about. But look at all the wars that we done been through for the last couple of years. I mean, except for Vietnam, we know about Vietnam, but I'm just saying, but we know about it from what we heard. But it's just like, look at all the wars that we done been through, and we probably had family members. I had a family member that fought, you know, one of the wars as well. But it's just like, you know, like that. You know, I understand the ways on a lot of people's minds. You know, but once again, you just got, you know, everybody doesn't process it the same. I got to understand that, but. You know, like don't just like, you know, social media makes that. That's another thing that can, you know, a lot of people like mentally, you know, like y'all letting social media just run y'all lives, and it's just like,
True. Well, hold on, Red. Ms. Best, are you on?
I am. Hi.
Hey. Hi, Ms. Best. How you doing?
Hi. I'm pretty good.
How you doing? So once again, let's do this intro. All right, y'all. We got our guest in the house, Ms. Sherry Ann Beth. How are you, ma'am? It's on the menu, the Blog Talk Radio. Once again, guest calling numbers 347-324-3395. That is 347-324-3395. And Ms. Beth, how are you this evening?
I'm great, thank you.
Okay. So, let's... For starters, who you are, what is your title, and what do you exactly do?
Take it away. Well, I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I have been for about I've been a social worker going on almost 20 years, but I'm a licensed clinical social worker. March actually is Social Workers Month, so shout out to all of the social workers out there doing wonderful work in so many different ways. I am the owner of a private practice in Farmingdale, New York, called Broad Hollow Psychotherapy. I'm a clinical supervisor. I am a college professor. I am a psychotherapist. I do a lot of different things, but it's all for the good of the people, really.
Okay.
Sounds great.
Okay. All right. And I got to ask, what got you started out in this field?
I've always been interested in why people do the things that they do. I started off thinking that I was going to go into psychology, but I ended up taking a shorter route, I guess, through social work, and one that involves working with people, but also not just working on mental processes, but also connecting them to services, trying to help them. If somebody is hungry, let's say, we can't just sit and talk about how hungry you are. At some point, I need to know how to help you to get something to eat, right? So social work is sort of, it's working with helping people, helping the individual, but also within their environment and the things that, you know, the issues that are impeding their success.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, that sounds I like that. I mean, I did watch you on TED Talk. And,
oh, you did? Okay.
Of course. You was just going to tell me and I wasn't going to watch it? Like, yeah. No, of course. Of course. I had to, check
okay.
it out. And, I do want to say, if no one else says it, but I'm sure people do say it, you're appreciated. I appreciate you. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that appreciate you and what you do, because it's not easy. I'm sure it's not easy trying to get people to open up and,
right.
Be transparent about things that have happened to them, or things that they are going through, or whatever fears, what may be down the line. I mean, when it comes down to this whole, mental health thing, it's a very, very broad spectrum and a host
right.
of things. And what do you, you specialize in, exactly?
I specialize in trauma recovery. That's my main,
okay.
that's my main focus. Yeah, is trauma recovery.
All right.
That's children, that's adults, that's anybody who has dealt with any kind of trauma.
Absolutely.
Okay. Go ahead, Red. You got a question?
No, I said absolutely.
Oh, no. My thing is.
No, for what she said.
Trauma. Well, trauma.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people look at it differently.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by trauma? Some people think trauma, head trauma. They don't really think of the mental aspect of it. They think about the more physical, thing of when it comes to trauma. But when you say trauma, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you can use an example of physical trauma, right? Physical trauma happens when something extraordinary happens to a person, something that happens to somebody that's outside of a person's normal ability to cope. It's too much, right? So the same thing with physical trauma, right? It's an injury that is too much. So you can look at trauma as a thing that happens, and you can also look at trauma as a response to something that happens. So sometimes you'll hear people say trauma is a normal response to abnormal circumstance. Go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead, finish.
No, I was just going to say that, so that's where I come in to help people to understand that although this traumatic event or these traumatic events may have happened in your family and they may have happened often in your family, it's still an extraordinary event or events, and sometimes people don't understand that. They don't know, because this is the only thing that I really know. They don't understand the gravity of what they went through. They don't understand the gravity of, the experiences that they had. They don't know that's not really something that they were supposed to go through. That wasn't something that they were supposed to go through at such a young
mm-hmm.
age. It wasn't
right.
something that they were supposed to go through without the resources to really know how to deal with it. And sometimes
right.
it takes us mm-hmm. sitting down in session to really understand, wow, I went through some wild stuff. I really,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know. And I didn't know I've been carrying this for so long. So that's what trauma recovery is really about.
Okay, so now, with that being said, because, a lot of times, we try to, keep the show a little balanced. I'm not really big on politics, but, politics here, the other things there, but we do talk about relationships. And one thing, do people suffer relationships? I mean, suffer trauma in relationships? Because it's nowadays you hear about a lot of, divorces or people are just not happy, in their situation. And, I don't know. It's people make up the breakup or break up the makeup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. But my thing is, is there a trauma along with that when it comes to personal relationships?
Absolutely. Definitely. And in fact, depending on your history of origin, your family of origin, depending on what you witnessed in your original family, that could determine that there'll be more trauma later on down the line in relationships. Relationships are going to bring your stuff up. You know, if there's something that you need healing, get into a relationship because it'll all come up, right? And relationships will either heal your trauma or they will perpetuate your trauma. So what do I mean by that? I mean that you can get into a relationship with somebody who is abusive. It's more likely for that to happen if you come from an abusive home or if you witnessed abuse in your home. Even though people usually will say, you know, I'll never go through that or I'm never going to do these things, sometimes we run away from our families, smack into our families, and we do it all over
wow.
again.
As I say, it's a learned behavior.
Yeah.
It's a learned behavior. Wow. Whatever you've seen at home, that's what you're going to go, you know, that's what you're going to bring out, as you said, in your relationship. You're going to bring that out.
It's possible. Like
because
I said, though, there's always hope, and that's one thing that I want to say
right.
because as a trauma therapist, I always want to talk about hope. So I said that relationships can either heal your trauma or perpetuate your trauma, right? So they
right.
do have they do have the ability to heal as well, right? They do have the ability to heal as well. Sometimes you can get into a new relationship and be treated right and actually realize for the first time that, wow, this is something that I should have been getting all along, right?
Mm-hmm.
This feels good. Yeah. This is nice. But the way that it perpetuates trauma is you can get into a relationship and it feels good and you don't think that you deserve it, so you
mm-hmm.
sabotage.
Or don't know what, like you don't see it. I'll say like, you know, a person that's never had that love from their mother or father,
right.
or that, I'll say nurturing from their mother,
right.
so they wouldn't
right.
know what love is feeling. Like they may think they're in love
right.
with that person, but you're not, you know, it's just more like an obsession or you just say, okay, I got somebody, but
mm-hmm.
you don't know how to love
right.
that person because you've never
right.
been loved.
Right.
So you're
right.
looking at, you know, you look at it in that type of way.
Right.
So, yeah.
So you're waiting for the other shoe to drop. You're waiting for, you know, you're
right.
waiting for
yeah.
the person to mess up and you don't believe it or you mess up.
Right.
Like I said, you sabotage
mm-hmm.
or, you know, it's like this feels too good to be true, so I'm going to leave. I'm
right.
leaving you before you leave me.
Right, yeah, that's hard. That's
and you know what's sad? Like I've
yeah,
I've,
that's
like,
that's really rough. Like
I've actually been in situations like that before, and I've heard that before, and you know the thing is, it makes you feel a way when someone says like, "Oh, I don't believe you," or it's like you start to form your own trauma from that point. Like, well. Am I being too good? Am I being too nice? Like, I'm just being me, you know? And
right.
it's like when someone else doesn't accept, you know, who you are and think like there's some type of motive behind it, it kind of makes you want to, like, you know, take a step back and be like, well, maybe I need to change something about me. And it seems like, you know, some, I guess for lack of a better term, you know, like trauma begets trauma sometimes. And,
yeah.
I didn't ever want to see it that way, but you know, when you hear it enough times, it just makes you kind of rethink yourself and wonder, am I doing the right thing by being nice? Or which sounds crazy, but I mean, it actually was a real thought to me. Like, was I, you know, being too nice or too generous, or you know, is there a problem, you know, with me? Because I guess the world is very different from, you know, how I see it. But, yeah, that's real interesting.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it is.
You know, well, when we were talking about, I guess, it basically the pandemic, what are your thoughts on it in terms of, you know, have you seen, like, a spike with trauma with, you know, when the pandemic, you know, came in, you know, from, I'll say from, what was it, 2020, you know, 2020, how have you seen the spike
yeah.
in terms of, you know, the trauma, you know, as I said, you know, before,
yeah.
the people losing their jobs, a person, they have been the breadwinner of that family, and, they lost their job, or even, you know, may have passed away from COVID, and, you know, they're no longer around. So how have you seen the spike from that, you know, from maybe before the pandemic to now?
Yeah. Everything that you just said, every single thing that you just said, I would probably say 2020, 2021 were probably some of the busiest times in my practice. I actually had to hire more staff during the pandemic because we had so many people calling, you know, calling and needing services. We've had to shut down. Close our wait list because we had so many people needing help. I have formed a Facebook group called the Long Island Clinicians of Color, which is a group of practitioners that are here in Long Island and Queens. And, you know, we're in the group. It's a group of therapists, and we're all, hey, does anyone have any openings for this person? Does anyone have openings? No.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, there's such a need. And like you just said, there's so many different reasons, you know, grief. Just the fact that, you know, one day we, you know, I think that this caught us all off guard, right? And I think that when we knew things were shutting down, we all thought it was going to be maybe a hot 3 weeks or so, and things would kind of go back to normal, and we're here 2 years later, literally going on, you know, that two-year mark. And so 1 minute we could just do things like normal, and then the next thing you know, we're shut down, and we stayed shut down. And you're losing jobs, and kids are home, and you're homeschooling, but you're also trying to work at the same time or not work, and you're trying to, you know, just trying to manage everything. So, yeah, it's been really tough. I've seen a spike in anxiety and depression, suicidal, you know, ideation.
Right.
It's been tough on everybody, especially kids, but everybody, you know. And so, yes, our practice is definitely, you know, we've seen a spike and an increase in services for sure.
I definitely believe that. That's just like just, the, you know, a rough thing that everyone has to go through. And, you know, you guys, you know, just to be there for those people, I'm sure they appreciated a whole lot. So, you know, it's just like, they didn't realize how traumatic this thing can be for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just,
it has been
Well, I mean, I know there was a period that we had to shut down, but did you actually have to physically, like, shut down and, like, stop seeing people because of, you know, what was going on?
We went remote. So prior to March, I guess mid-March or around March 20-something, I had been seeing people in person. I had always seen people in person. There was this thing called telehealth, and there were some people who did it, but for the most part, that wasn't something that I was really interested in because I like the one-on-one contact. I like to be able to see, you know, if you even shift in your seat, I want to be able to see, you know, as we're talking, what your body language is like.
Body language.
I want to be able to see all of that. and so now we had to go, you know, and at first I was giving people the option, you know, once we really started understanding that this thing was here, and I was giving people the option, do you want to come in or would you like to do telehealth? And then at one point it was just, there are no options. We're just doing telehealth. So, I mean, I thank God that I had the option to do telehealth, because if this would have happened maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I probably would be one of those people that was shut down without a job as well, you know, because the technology wasn't the same. But I will say that the insurance companies really did take the lead, and they said you can do teletherapy, you can do phone calls, however you have to do it. We're good. However you make it work, we're okay with it, you know. And they even for a little while took away co-payments. So, you know, it was they really did make it a lot easier for people to be seen and get the help that they needed.
Yeah, because that would have been like a big, like, lifeline cut if you had to, like, kind of like, well, we have to, like, completely shut down and you know, and so, you know, you know, further notice. And, you know, I believe that there are a lot of people that have grown dependent on people like you and your services. And once again, thank you, you know, for your service and all that you do. Because, you know, as much as a lot of us don't want to admit it, like as we were discussing the other day, like we're all connected. In some way, shape, or form, like we're all connected. And,
absolutely.
You know, one thing we can't remove, you know, from, like, life is that human feel, even though it seems like, you know, technology, you know, tries to do it and, you know, it's happening other ways. We can't use that, like, lose that human quality, you know, about one another because, I mean, who knows, you know, what happens, you know, after that. And the thing with this pandemic, like, I'm sure you've seen a spike in a lot of things, especially suicide. And I have to, you know, ask, I was reading something the other day, and I've been checking out some things out, and it's like there seems to be a spike in a lot of suicides with black men.
Yes, for sure.
And,
that's definitely an increase.
And I have concerns as a black man. You know, I do have concerns. And I want to know, like, what do you know? Like, what is your thoughts on this? And, you know, how do we, you know, try to find a way to move forward or get people the necessary help that they need?
What I know is that we have to take this seriously. We have to look at it for what it is. We have to call it a crisis. And we have to urge the men in our lives to seek help.
Mm-hmm.
This is real. Just in general, men choose more lethal methods of suicide, and so they're more likely to complete. It's called completing suicide because they choose more lethal methods just in general, meaning that they'll get a gun or they'll, you know, I don't need to be so graphic, but, you know, but they'll use more lethal means to do it. And so the likelihood that they will actually succeed is higher because of the means that they choose.
Wow.
I mean, listen, I will admit if I have to share, it's back in like, I think 94, 95, like after my father passed away. And it was like my mother passed away in like 87, my father passed away in like 94. And, you know, I had some family members pass, you know, in between that time. And there was just a hopelessness that it seemed like no one can explain to me. And I can sit down and, you know, talk to a brother, sister, or a friend, but, you know, it just seemed like I just felt alone during all these conversations. So I looked towards the military. I wanted to join the military to not come home because I didn't want to do that to myself. So I just felt like, hey, if I go to the military, you know, maybe I won't have to come back. Maybe something will happen and, you know, that, you know, that'll be that. But of course I got shut down. I got asthma. So I was like, wow, like I can't even, you know, I felt, and it made me feel like even worse because it's like, I can't even join. I can't even go do this because of that. And it's, like I just kind of spiraled. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I know. It's like universe is telling me, no, don't do that. But, you know, as a black man, it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to sit down and talk, especially when you were raised somewhere. Like my father's from Trinidad. And he wasn't really about that talk, you know what I'm saying? Unless it was with a belt or, you know, it was about to cut somebody out. But he wasn't about getting, you know, all close and personal. You know, I've always seen the rough exterior. And other men in, you know, my family at that time, they were all just like men, you know, dressed sharp. They kept, you know, whatever their feelings were, they just kind of kept them to themselves or they dealt with it, you know, their own way. And,
but that also has to come with upbringing, you know, as you said, not to cut you off, but upbringing, because my own dad saying, wait, he never talks about how he feel like, because he's older now, I have to make him talk about certain things, or I have to pull that out of him, because it's just like, once again, and he's from Virginia, and once again, my grandfather, you know, just like you said, they didn't talk about their feelings. They didn't talk about how they felt. But go ahead, yeah, basically.
And that's a problem with black men. It's like there's a fear to approach, because we don't want, a lot of us don't want to seem weak, or we think that if there's a weakness in revealing some of yourself.
Right.
Excuse me. And my thing is like, what do you suggest? You know,
I think that having discussions like this, hearing what you just said, is so powerful, right? To say that I didn't know what to do. So you were basically trying to commit death by military. You know?
Yeah, because there's a lot of, like, when I talk to other men, like, you hear some of the same things, and we've seen it in the media where, you know, I mean, we can say, oh, you know, some of these cops, they go out there and they shoot black men, but how many black men out there really are seeking or looking for that escape through that? Because they're not going
to
do it themselves.
I'm sure that there are some, I'm sure that there are some people who do that, and you'll never know. I think that sometimes there are car accidents that happen that you don't necessarily know. You know, there are different things that you'll just never know, because a lot of times people are not talking about it. People think that things, suicide happens like the movies where somebody left a note. That's not true. Most times there is no note.
Mm-hmm.
Most times people don't say anything. I spent 14 years working in children's psychiatric hospitals, and there were so many kids that were hospitalized because of either suicidal thoughts or they actually did attempt to do something. So people are in pain, and they need to just be able to talk it out. Depression is a liar. It tells you that things are not going to be better. It tells you that the world is better without you. But if you can just talk it through and get to somebody and let them know that you're feeling this way, to get you through that space that you're in, to be able to get to the place where it gets better, because it always gets better, you know, but if you can, you have to be able to get there. You have to be able to get there. So having these kind of conversations, I heard you all talking about, I wasn't exactly sure what you were talking about with social media, but I thank God for social media. The good part of it. I know that there's a lot
right.
of downsides.
Right, it'll be a blessing
but,
and a curse, yeah.
Right, absolutely. It's a huge blessing and it's a huge curse. But I think that part of what has made, therapy more popular is the fact that you have celebrities talking about therapy. There are different memes about therapy. There are different therapy experts online. And, you know, we're able to see where it is popular. And it is, you know, we're seeing people that look like us doing this. Taraji P. Henson, she has a foundation that helps to pay for therapy for people.
I think, too.
She does have a show.
Something like that.
Yeah, she also pays for people to go to therapy. So beyond the show, she's actually saying sign up and you can get 5 free sessions.
Oh.
And, you know, hopefully it'll go beyond that, you know. So I think that there are a lot of people that are going out there and really helping to destigmatize therapy and mental illness and people going on platforms and saying, hey, when this happened, I was depressed, you know, and I did therapy. I talked to somebody and it was helpful. So, you know, more of that, more of the good parts of social media.
Right.
Well, what does depression look like? Or what does it sound like? What are some of the symptoms, you know, of it? Because, you know, sometimes people may be going through something and they really don't even know it.
Yeah.
Like
depression,
what is,
it's very interesting, because if you're just looking to be sad and can't get out of the bed, if that's the only thing that you're looking for, you can miss it, right? So of course it is that the feeling of depression, depression, feeling depressed, sadness, but it's also anger. It can also be anger. I think that's a big one that people
really?
Don't realize. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean to say it like that, because I mean, you know, I'm like, wow, anger issues, or I mean,
no,
being
just
angry.
Like I'm
being
gonna, I'll give an example. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut anybody. I'm just,
no,
I'll funny. Give
Go
an
ahead.
Example of, you know, my own son when he went through a breakup with his girlfriend a couple of years ago. He was angry, and I seen the difference in him, because he's usually like a, you know, he's usually very, you know, happy, and, you know, he likes to be a jokester and stuff. But at that time when he went through that breakup with her, he was just angry. Like, I could say something to you, we joke about it. He was very angry. But I knew what that, the thing is, I knew what that was. And I told, you know, I sat down, talked, I think maybe a year or two after that, I talked to him. I said, you know what? And we were discussing, and I told him, I said, you were depressed. I said, you were depressed because of the how the breakup went with you and her. I said, not that he was like, oh, no, I was. I said, yes, you was. I said, because I can tell the difference. I'm your mother. I can tell the difference in your demeanor. I said, usually I'll say something to you. You started going off. You know, you come in the house angry. You mad. You just stand up. I knew what that was. So, yes,
right.
Anger is a big thing. You know, he's playing angry songs and stuff. So I knew what that was, you know.
You have to understand, anger is a secondary emotion. Anger is like depression's big bad brother,
mm-hmm.
right? It comes in when you don't want to feel the sadness, when you don't want to feel the vulnerability. Anger comes in to save the day. It comes in to help you not feel what you're really feeling. Mm. All right, so anger is always secondary to another emotion, another more vulnerable emotion. When we don't want to feel weak, because the sadness makes us feel weak, that vulnerability makes us feel weak. I don't want to feel weak, but I can be angry.
Right.
I don't want to talk to you. I want to be left alone. So what am I going to be?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be angry.
Yeah, that's
angry,
definitely
what
you. Like, I don't want to be. I don't want nobody bother me.
Right.
All of that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why emotional intelligence is so important, because we can just deal with that first emotion, right? We can just deal with, hey, this hurts. This person isn't here anymore. I love this person, or I thought we were going to do this, and I thought we were going to do that, and we're not going to do that anymore. That's not happening now. And instead of feeling that, I go to anger. But wouldn't it just be nice if you could just feel that and move through that and do the work that those emotions allow you to do? Because the emotions that we have are there to help us to do our work. It's there to help us to move through certain things. There's lessons in those emotions. But if you don't ever feel it, you never get to have the lesson. You
right.
never get to go, you never get to really go deep and figure out what's exactly going, you know, what's going on with you. So, yeah, so anger is definitely one of them. Sometimes people eat too much. Sometimes people don't eat
mm-hmm.
enough. Sometimes people sleep too much. Sometimes people don't sleep at all. You know, there's so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
There's these feelings of hopelessness, feelings of worthlessness, helplessness. All of those different things are symptoms of depression. So it's not
right.
just the sadness. It's a lack of concentration even. So, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
you have kids that are in school and they might be dealing with all kind of stuff at home. Little Timmy don't care about 2 + 2 when we don't know what's going on at home.
He don't know if he's going to eat when he go home. Like, you know, things like
that
go through the head.
Your brain can't even function properly. You know? So it's just like they go to school and now they're being disruptive in school, or they're not doing well in school, but nobody's asking, hey, what's going on?
Right.
Now, you said earlier emotional intelligence.
Yes.
Explain, please, or define.
Well, I mean, just the ability to know how to process your emotions, to not be afraid of expressing yourself, for it not to just go into anger, for you to be able to feel an emotion and actually feel it, express it, not push it down. Because what people also don't understand is that if you have some kind of an emotion, or you feel an emotion sort of bubbling up, if you just felt it, it would do what it needs to do and it would go away and you would go on about your day. But what do? People either make the emotion bigger by telling a bigger story and extending that time, or they push it down. And when you push the emotion down, people actually think that it goes away. It doesn't go away. You're just stockpiling that emotion for a later time. So now you're upset about something, but you still have this other residual upset about some other thing, right? And now your response to something that could have just been like a little hiccup is now this huge thing. And why is it this huge thing? Because you're carrying over other emotions about other things that you thought went away just because you pushed it down. The other thing is that if you don't express emotions, if you don't feel emotions, you're either going to have some kind of a mental outburst or physical illness. And people don't understand that either, because when you're upset about something, you're holding it in, that is stressful on your body. That causes inflammation, and inflammation causes illness.
Wow.
So you got to let it out. You have to let it out. People think that if I let these emotions out, it's going to take me over. It's going to be too much, and it won't. It'll just happen. You'll just have it, and it'll be done. And then the next time it's time to feel another feeling, you'll feel that other feeling. But people don't know that. They're afraid. They don't want to do that. They're afraid to do that. They think it's going to be too overwhelming. They think it's going to be, you know, too much. It's going to make them look weak. But I would rather process my emotions in my own time, in my own way, than to be, you know, at work and something happens at work and now I'm having a mental breakdown because I've just been holding things in for so long.
Yeah. Well, all right. Like, we've all, you know, watched the news. I mean, I really don't watch too much, but, you know, I got to delve in from time to time. When we look at some of these issues with school shooters, you know, and things of that nature, even the Kyle Rittenhouse thing, when it comes down to mental health, because, I mean, it's all relative. Does it seem like white people have more of a, I would say, a recognition of that emotional intelligence compared to, you know, black people?
Who was the little kid? Dylan Roof, I believe his name was, right? That's the one that he shot those
people
in
the
church, right? And he was given Burger King.
Yeah.
Right? When he was arrested, he was treated to Burger King.
Mm-hmm.
So the police and that, does it, huh?
No, I said, yeah, correct.
Oh, mm-hmm. So the police in that instance was able to see his humanity. They were able to see him as a person somehow, even though he did god-awful things to people prior, right before that. And I think that sometimes... Mm-hmm. When the perpetrator is a white male, and usually that's with a lot of times that's who these mass shooters are. At least the media, the police, they're able to say, oh, well, there was something going on with him. I think that there was a guy in Atlanta that had gone to a bunch of different, I think, Asian nail shops or massage shops or something like that. And the police officer, when he was arrested, said the man had had a bad day. Said that he had had a bad day. He took that back after, or apologized for the statement, or sort of doubled back on that one. But he still said that. You know, so I think that a lot of times they're able to be seen in their full humanity, and we're not always given, or black men, or, you know, black people are not always given the privilege of being seen in our full, as our full human selves.
So basically, there is a double standard. when it comes to, you know, black people and white people and the, you know, the thing of mental health, there is a double standard. Like, it's okay for them to do what they do because, you know, it's some type of issue and, you know, they need help, this, that, and third. But when something happens with us or we do something, it's automatic, oh, aggression, you know, they're bad people. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of our people, black people, see that. They go through that, that mistreatment. They sit back and deal with that double standard. And it's like, they get frustrated because it seems like nothing, that there's nothing we can do about it. Like, no matter what we do, it's like it's never going to be good enough, or it's never going to be fair, or we're always going to be stereotyped or picked on, excuse me, or made to seem the bad person and everything. You can have a, and yeah, you can have a white boy shoot up a whole school, and they're like, oh, he just has a couple of issues. You know, he needs somebody to speak to him. But let a black person go out there and rob somebody, you know, take somebody's purse, and it's like, oh, my gosh, like, you're the worst thing. You're a menace to society. Throw them under the jail. And
right.
That hurts.
Yeah, it does.
It says to not only our people, but it says to our, you know, even our youth, like, you ain't nothing. No matter what happens, no matter how it goes, you ain't nothing. So when you talk about that whole thing about that feeling of hopelessness and, you know, disparity, is like, I think a lot of it comes from that. It comes from that mistreatment. Like, we were stolen from our land and mistreated ever since. And how does
racism,
like, in your opinion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Guys, but yeah, how does that play,
no, go,
play a big role?
In my opinion, you can go ahead. I'm sorry. Can you just say that again?
Yeah, how does that play, like, a, you know, a role, you know, in our mental health? You know,
yeah,
especially in, you know, in this country.
Racism is definitely a trauma, right? Racism is a trauma. Going through what we've gone through has been traumatic. There is a such thing as intergenerational trauma. And so intergenerational trauma is basically we feel the effects of trauma of our ancestors, of our great grandparents. You know, that trauma lives in our DNA. So there are certain things. It's funny because, you know, there are certain things that black people just do, right? That we, if you're at an ATM machine, right, and somebody stands too close to you, what are you gonna do? You're gonna have a reaction.
I'm looking. What you looking at?
Yeah, exactly.
You're gonna have a reaction. You're gonna have a reaction.
Right.
How do I know? How did I know that you were gonna say that? Because we have this collective trauma, right? That we don't want people all up on us. That's a trauma response, right? Because you being too close to me in this situation, in this vulnerable situation, you're tricking my you're tripping my fight or flight.
Right.
You know, there was a study that was done, and I'm gonna mess up this study, but I'm just gonna tell it to you anyway. And if anyone knows the real study, they could always correct me later. But I'm gonna give you the gist of this study, and it explains intergenerational trauma. So there was a study done with these mice, right? So these mice were in a lab, and they were there was cinnamon placed in front of them, okay? So they smelled the cinnamon, and when these mice smelled the cinnamon, they were shocked, okay?
Wow.
They smelled the cinnamon. They were shocked. Mm. Eventually, when they smelled the cinnamon, whether there was a shock or not, they had a fear response. They were afraid, okay? So this is a set of mice. So these mice have little mice babies, and these mice babies have their little mice babies, right? And you put cinnamon in front of the mice grandbabies, say, right? And they had a fear response. They were afraid of the cinnamon.
Wait, without even smelling it?
They were afraid. No, smelling it. So the first generation of mice smelled the cinnamon and they were shocked.
Yeah.
Then their grandbabies, who were not born at the time, because they were grandbabies, these mice grandbabies were then placed in front of cinnamon, and they were afraid of the cinnamon.
Of the cinnamon,
wow.
Right.
Wow.
And they were not a part of that study. They weren't even born.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
That's intergenerational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But people, you know, straight people who say, "Oh, that's only on a bunch of mics. That doesn't apply to people." You know, like, you know, they don't really think that, you know, that can happen. Because when it comes down to black people, oh no, that's not possible. Oh no, that's not happening. We're just aggressive by nature. Because I've heard that before, and it's like, how are we aggressive by nature? And if we are, why do you think we became this way? Because, as you said before, you know, before, Red, like, it's a learned behavior. And what have we learned by, you know, from living in this country? What have we learned, you know? I mean, history, it's his story, so there's no lie to it. I guess that's the reason why they try to change it to school books now. But, I mean, it is what it is. You know, it's not like slavery didn't happen. It's there. So I don't see how they can actually try to label.
Well, let's go with that theory that we are aggressive by nature, right? Let's just say that is the case. If you're black and you're in this country, or you're here in any of the African diaspora, you are here because somebody made it before you, right? You're here because some ancestor survived deplorable conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so maybe we're stronger and we're tougher because we come from survivors. So maybe that is the case. If you had this one come together and you made Henry Bob get with Pearly Sue because they were both big and tall, and then they had children. Okay, so maybe there's something to that. But that was still a design that we weren't a part of, right? That was something that was that's something that was done to us, if you get what I'm saying.
Right.
I get it. Yeah, I definitely
get it.
So maybe there's something to that. The fact that we're here, that means that somebody, the fact that we're here means that someone, one of our ancestors or two of our ancestors survived the Middle Passage even. All right? Then they had to go through everything that they went through. Then they had to go through Jim Crow. Then all the stuff. So we're survivors. So maybe, you know, maybe we're here because we come from a tougher stock. Let's just say maybe that is the case. But that doesn't take away the fact that racism is at every corner in so many different ways. You talk about Ukraine, and they're talking about how they're not letting African people into certain areas. So they're like, even in the midst of war, there's racism. We're still always contending with racism.
Right.
Yeah, because racism didn't stop even during the pandemic.
Right, and that's definitely trauma. You know, that's traumatic. You know, as you said, it's traumatic. Like, we're going back to what we were talking about, like, you know, black men with, you know, a lot of black men with, you know, suicide and just having trauma. That's trauma. That's just like, they're seeing these things. They're seeing these things, especially, like I say a younger generation, because, you know, my sons are in this younger generation. They're in their 20s, upper 20s, and lower 20s. So they're seeing a lot of this stuff. They're seeing things, like I said, when we were in our 20s, we didn't see this stuff. We just maybe heard, but now it's being seen. So now,
right.
I say visually, that they're seeing people like them being killed right in front of you, that's traumatic. That's definitely traumatic. So I know that, you know, you possibly, you know, hear a lot of that, you know, with, you know, whoever you speak to, I'm sure you hear a lot of that or see a lot of that as well. Especially, you know, like a lot of the younger generation.
We've got our plug for that stuff.
Well, I remember when... I mean, I think one of the things that did it for me and a lot of people was I remember the, it's so repetitive, the Mike Brown to when Mike Brown happened. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, to be like fully honest, I took that as a display of like, yeah, this is what we do. I mean, to leave his body under his sheet
yeah.
for hours in the hot sun. To me, it was mm-hmm. it's like it reminded me of like those pictures of like lynching, where it, you know, because I mean I look at stuff like that and it's like, yeah, we're sending a message. We want to let you know. Like that's what it reminded me of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, to some people who are not that strong, it really brings about a fear. And it's like, okay, I get the message. You know, I'll do this. I'll do that. But then it sets off something else in other people to continue to be defiant and continue to, you know, to fight, you know, messages like that. I mean, like I said, I used to look at these pictures, you know, sometimes I still do. And it's like, what type of mind do you have to stand around and take a picture with someone hanging from a tree? After you just finished, like, torturing
him. That's a mental illness as well. Okay.
But.
And then sell the pictures as postcards, right? Isn't that what happened?
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. But yet, you say that we are savage. You say black people are savage by nature, or we're aggressive by nature. But we have never done anything like that. Like if we even
that's just a way to justify, right? That's just a way to justify what has been done, right? Like so, in order for you to justify mistreating us, you have to deem us subhuman, right? Like that's just a way
mm-hmm.
for you to continue to do what you're doing. So that's just because they say it doesn't make it so.
Yeah, but there's people like you that let it be known, like, just because they say it doesn't make it so. But, you know, there's still, like, a lot of non-believers. Like, you got a lot of work cut out for you. Like you and people in your profession, like, your work is really cut out for you. Because it's like, you know, this has been how many hundreds of years? You know,
mm-hmm.
have we gone through this? How many times do we continue to see it? Just when you get a little comfortable or you think everything's okay, then there's the George
yeah.
Floyd, or there's another Tamir Rice, or there's a Trayvon Martin. I mean, the fact, you know, it's everything is a smack in the face to it. And they expect us to not be traumatized by it because I guess we're supposed to be stronger. So they say, like, we're tougher. But even tough people get weak.
Absolutely.
Even tough people get tired. And it seems like in this country, you know, they seem like we don't get tired. And it's starting to show, and it's been, I'm sure, I mean, I haven't been to too many other places, but even when you said the whole thing with Ukraine, I mean, wow. Even in the midst of war, is the racism. So where does it, like, ultimately, what are we supposed to do, and where does it, like, even take a pause, if ever? You know.
I don't know if it takes a pause, but I think that things like therapy, it's revolutionary, right? The idea that I'm going to dare to take care of myself, the idea that I'm going to dare to not buy into your definition of who I am, right?
Mm.
I do hurt. I do have pain, so I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to make sure that I do things to take care of me. Those are all revolutionary, to do it anyway and to not give in and to not, you know, think the same as what is being told about us. I'm going out and I'm saying that I want to help people that look like me. I'm proud to be a black therapist. I'm proud to be able to say that I'm here and I can help you and I understand what you're going through experientially. Like, not just, yeah, I definitely have read books and read different things, and but I've also been there in certain ways, not always, but in certain ways. So the fact that I'm even here as a Black therapist and I'm saying, yes, I am interested in Black mental health, that is important to me. We're going to do this anyway. We're going to thrive anyway. That's how we do it. You know,
so do you...
I'm killing the strong Black woman. we're letting that go. We're going to rest. We're going to say no. We're going to have boundaries. We're going to do all of these things because we have to be okay anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, one thing I would like to ask, so what does that say for, Black people, should they go see Black therapists? Because I remember one time I was watching an episode of, like, This Is Us, and one of the characters in the movie, I mean the show, I got to, the father,
Randall.
The Black father.
Randall.
Mm-hmm.
Randall.
I remember he was going to therapy, but he was seeing one person, and then all of a sudden he was like, you know what, I need to switch up. I need to go see a Black therapist. And I was like, wow. Like, you know, at one point I thought therapy was therapy all across the board, but
sure.
Is it really?
No, no. I think that, so I have had people come to me. Look, I was supposed to do something before, but what I think is important is when you're seeking a therapist, you need to find somebody skilled in what you're seeking therapy for. Okay. So I've had people reach out to me and say, hey, can you help me with OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder? We don't necessarily have to get into that, but that's not something that I do. That's not something that I am well versed in at all. And so I explain that I don't do that. And, you know, this person wanted me to maybe refer them to someone else. And I said, in a case like that, in my opinion, it's most important that you get a therapist that is skilled in that, period. Because that was a very specific thing that she needed help with. Now, that doesn't mean that there weren't other issues that may come up. And, you know, I'm not exactly sure if race played a part in that, because that wasn't something that's a part of my skill set. I didn't really get into it with her. But for me, I thought it was most important that she find a therapist that is skilled in the treatment of OCD. And if they happen to be Black, then if that's something that she's looking for, then that's wonderful. If you're looking for somebody to help you with things like racism, and you're a Black person, and you're looking for somebody to help you with things like racism and prejudice and microaggressions and things like that, yeah, I absolutely do believe that should be a Black therapist. So the short answer is that it depends. You know, there are times where, yeah, that's exactly what you need. And if that's what you want, you know, hopefully you'll be able to find that person. Now, Black clinicians represent 4% of all of the therapists in the United States, at least. So it's a small number.
Right. I believe it's a small number. It should be, you know, I feel it should be more, giving that, you know, I didn't mean to cut in, but just, I feel it should be more given the time that we're living in now. I feel it should be more, but yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's a really small percentage, yeah.
It is a small number, but I mean, you know, I am a part of multiple groups where there's a lot of us that are doing a lot of different things and, you know, doing some really great things. I belong to, like I said, I have a group on Facebook that's just for Long Island clinicians, and there's about maybe a little over 100 of us that serve Long Island.
Okay.
And people may not even know that there's 100 of us, but they're at least in
right.
the group there is. But I've also belonged to other groups, clinicians of color, that are in the tens of thousands of therapists in the United States,
wow.
here in the United States. So we're
right.
around. You know, we are around.
But people have to seek you out.
What did you say?
I said people have to seek out. Like, they have to seek out.
There are, you know, again, going back to technology and the internet, there's a great website called Therapy for Black Girls that I'm a part of, that I'm in a directory. There's also Therapy for Black Men. So there are other, if you Google black therapists near me, a lot of white therapists will come up when you do that. But there are, black therapists that come up also. So if that's something that you're looking for, you do have to seek it out. Those are two really great websites that have therapists that are available. Like I said, Taraji P. Henson has, I believe it's the Boris Henson Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They give money to, they will pay for 5 therapy sessions. There's also
right.
the Loveland Foundation, that is another foundation that will pay for, I believe it's either 4 or 5 sessions also with a therapist of color. So,
okay.
they're out there. We are out there.
Yeah, I'm saying people have to want to seek that, that they have to want to seek that help. And once again, because people feel that because you go, you have people in general, just not people of color, they feel that, if I'm going to see a therapist, or they don't want to tell anybody that they're going to seek that help. And, they don't want to be labeled, or they don't want the family to be labeled, or they don't want the family to know because they think the family's going to judge them, or people are going to judge them. And my thing is, I'm going to ask this question to you, what if a person is seeking the help,
mm-hmm.
They're going to a therapist, they're seeking help, and or if they're doing both, I guess, if their therapist does prescribe them with some type of medication or something, and they're seeking help, but that help, that does not seem to be working for them, because then it's like you're still in that place of trauma or whatever it is. What does that person do, or what can someone do for them? Or like at this point, I don't want to put that up, but is this to a point where a person may have to go to maybe a mental hospital or something like that? Like what
mm-hmm.
That's something that kind of works on my brain. Like, what do you do if a person's to the point where they're doing all of this therapy and medication and all that stuff, and they're still not, it's still not working for them?
Right. So let me just clarify. For the most part, your therapist is either going to be a clinical social worker like myself, a psychologist or a mental health counselor, a licensed professional. I think it's a licensed professional counselor, and we don't prescribe medication. Psychiatrists, doctors, and nurse practitioners are the ones that prescribe medication.
Okay.
So we're going to do talk therapy. I've been in private practice. I've been a therapist since 2003, and I have been in private practice since 2011, and I have never hospitalized anybody in either of those roles in all of that time.
Okay.
In order for you to be hospitalized, you have to be a danger to yourself or someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are a danger to yourself and someone else, you need to be hospitalized.
Right.
That's not negotiable.
Right.
If you're telling me that, Sherry, I'm going to go home after this session and I'm going to kill myself, I can't let you leave my office.
Right.
Or if we're doing teletherapy, and with teletherapy, I have to know when we're in session, I need to know where you are. Even though I'm not physically with you, I need to know where you are. And for the most part, I know everybody's house. I know where, if they're
mm-hmm.
in their living room, if they're in their bedroom, whatever. But if you're home, I need to know you're home. And if you're somewhere else, I need to know that you're wherever you are. Because if there is some kind of a psychiatric emergency that arises during our session, I need to get the police to you, okay?
Right.
If you are a danger to yourself or others, you need to go to the hospital. It's not, it's, you know, that's not something that we're going to play with, because I want you to be okay.
Right.
All
right.
Right. So that, but that's not something that's necessarily going to be, and that, I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, but, you know, but for the most part, it really doesn't. And the level that I'm at with private practice, a lot of times my clients are just everyday people, you know, they're not really coming in with really heavy diagnoses like paranoid schizophrenia or, you know, a lot of times they're seen at a, people with those types of diagnoses are usually seen at a higher level of care. And they're not usually
right.
coming to my office. People that I see typically have, for the most part, they have anxiety and depression. Anxiety is probably the number one diagnosis that you know, people come in with is anxiety. And then
okay.
second is depression. And then there are other
okay.
things. And, you know, so that's how that goes. But if I'm calling the police on you, it's because you need it. You know, that's not something that I take lightly. It's not something that, you know, I really have to know that you're a danger to yourself or others.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And before,
but if
so hold on, Red. Before
right.
we got a 9089 on the air and 5947. What's up? You're on the air, man. What's up, Mika?
Going on. Hey, I know I'm a little late to the show. You're the first. I'm just curious though, because ever since this whole COVID, everyone's locked away thing happened, you know, you have a lot more issues of domestic violence, clinical depression,
yeah.
anxiety, and everything else under the sun. Now, for someone who's an introvert, you know, because I'm an introvert. So being locked away didn't bother me, and it still doesn't. I'm just that
enjoyed
little.
It.
Listen, I'm mad
no,
for
I'm
people
enjoying
that
it
want
as
to
well.
Train. But, I mean, to someone like me, I would never think that I'm depressed because I don't feel anything like I felt this way prior to this. You know, I don't feel mm-hmm. like I'm really locked. You know, I'm locked off away from the world or anything like that. So I guess my question to you is, how would someone like me notice or even have any signs of any type of depression or anxiety or anything like that? Because, I mean,
right.
doesn't it also depend on the person's personality, like who
absolutely.
They are to begin with?
You are absolutely right. You're absolutely right. So here's the thing. Something that may be traumatic to one person is not necessarily going to be traumatic to another person. And what you just said is spot on. It's really about who were you before the thing happened?
Right.
Who were you before the thing happened? What were your, what is your personality? What are your coping skills? What are your strengths? What are your supports? You know, there are some people who absolutely didn't mind, you know, being home because they were home and
mm-hmm.
that was comfortable and it was fine. So just because something, there's nothing that happens that's 100% across the board going to be traumatic for everyone. Okay. And it's really going to
mm-hmm.
depend on who you were before the thing happened.
Right.
And there's actually a lot of work that you can do. When something happens, if you're ever involved in any kind of a trauma or any kind of traumatic event, the first 30 days are so crucial. What you do in those first 30 days, the supports that you get, the way that you take care of yourself, the you know, the things that you do to make sure that you're okay or to just support yourself, how you connect with either your church or your friends, exercise, all of those different things can really help you to really be okay and to not have something go from acute stress, which is the state that we're in right after a trauma happens, to go into a PTSD, which is a post-traumatic stress disorder. So
mm-hmm.
that doesn't necessarily have to happen. So you being an introvert, you know, is probably a protective factor for you during this time. So you're right.
I'm sorry, Miss Beth, but I have to out her because that's like, okay, you know, my sis, my little sis, and she's just trying to use you to cover up her own weirdness. Like, that's
she's
what she's
okay.
trying to do. She's trying to find. Yeah, she's just trying to find a lady. Ain't nothing wrong with her. She's just trying to, you know, she just
no,
want to justify the weird stuff that she does.
That's all.
Hey,
so for the record, there is nothing weird. Listen,
I don't appreciate being a part of this ruse.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is a ruse.
For the record, I've just gotten crankier and older. I just want to point that out.
Excuses.
That's
but
not
what I do have to ask. What is anxiety? Like,
what is anxiety?
Yeah, what is, like, anxiety or panic attack? Like, what is that?
Okay. So anxiety is something that we all have, okay? Anxiety is something that we all have. If you're crossing a major highway, right, your anxiety is going to have you looking both ways the whole way. You're going to be looking for the cars. You're going to be making sure that it's safe for you to cross. So anxiety, for the most part, is a bodily mechanism that just allows us to be safe, okay? But then there is clinical anxiety, and that's when there's constant worry about things, when there's really nothing to worry about, or ruminating thoughts, worry about things that are not that are most likely not going to happen. Like I have a client who is afraid that when she goes into Walmart that the ceiling is going to cave in, and for the most part that's probably never going to happen, you know, but she's worried about that. So it can be fear that is disproportionate to the risk. And it's something that, again, it's the number one reason why people come into therapy. Black people as well. People think that we don't have anxiety, but we do. It could be worried about, there's different types of anxiety. Even being afraid of like a spider or a snake, that's a form of anxiety, a different form of anxiety.
Afraid,
you can have
being afraid of the police.
Well, that's a little bit different, only because there is a real risk there. There can be a real risk there, right? So
I think that's
proportionate to the risk. So, you know, my job as a therapist is never going to be to get rid of your anxiety 100%. Because, again, we need it to sort of discern different things, right? We need it to sort of take stock of our environment and make sure that we're okay. We make certain decisions based on our level of safety. So anxiety in and of itself is not a bad thing.
But when does it become a bad thing? That's the thing. When does it become a bad thing?
Okay, when you are avoiding situations. So again, going back to that client that's afraid that if she goes into a Walmart, the ceiling is going to cave in. So now, when you are avoiding going into Walmart because you're afraid, when you're not going anymore, when it starts to take over your life decisions, when you're avoiding different things and people and places because you're afraid that something's going to happen, and it's most likely not going to happen. When you have a physical response to the thought of something happening, okay? So you're thinking about, I don't know, whatever the thing is, and now yet you are having this physiological response, a panic attack. A panic attack is your body going into fight or flight. So you can have accelerated heart rate. You can become sweaty palms, you know, hyperventilating, just this stuckness that you can't get out of, you know, and it's really
right.
about just the fear and avoidance that is disproportionate to the actual risk.
So my question is, what's the difference between social anxiety and, darn it, I forgot what the other one was. Oh, crap. I'm sorry. Listen, it's been a long day. So social anxiety, then. Let's just stick with that. Don't judge me. I'm still working on my home office here. Social anxiety. What are the signs? You know what? What are the signs of social anxiety? Like, is being in a crowded place and then starting to have like a attacks a sign of it? I'm just curious.
It could be. Yeah. So social anxiety is really about the fear of being judged. The fear of making a fool of yourself. You avoid, again, with anxiety, the biggest piece that becomes debilitating in anxiety is avoidance. Anxiety loves avoidance. If you avoid doing things, you only make anxiety bigger. So, yes, public speaking. Most people have a fear of public speaking. So, but we're typically not going to do public speaking every day, right? Unless that's your job or
something.
But we're talking about just going to a party, you know, just going to a party. That person that doesn't want to get up and dance, that person that doesn't want to say hello, that person that just kind of leaves out the side door without saying goodbye, you know, that person that may not even come. You invite your friend and you're mad because you've invited this person out 20 times, and every single time something comes up, they may be suffering from anxiety. That may be too much for them. And you're thinking it's personal. You know, you think, oh, she don't want to hang out with me, or they don't want to do this, or they don't want to do that. But maybe they're just deathly afraid. You know, they don't want to go out. Like, maybe they'll go out with you, but now you're bringing along your coworkers or your new boo, and it's just too much, and I can't do it because I'm just afraid that I'm going to do something so ridiculous in front of people and be judged and laughed at and ostracized, and it probably would never happen. That's social anxiety.
Gotcha. We got Miss Cherry on. Miss Cherry. Hey, Miss Cherry, how you doing?
Hi, Miss Cherry.
Hey, lady. How you doing?
Everyone. How you doing?
Take it away, Miss Cherry.
Thank you for coming on and talking about mental health in our community because it's really important. And I've been listening to you, and you mentioned you have about 10 years' worth of experience. So I'm just wondering if with COVID, are you seeing an increase in the need for mental health amongst minority people, or has it always been there and just not been addressed?
I did talk about that there has absolutely been an increase in need to the point where we're full, you know, and I have added more people to my staff over this period of time. During the time where a lot of people had lost their jobs, I was actually hiring.
Because it's more normalized to ask for help now. Like, I know with Simone Biles, before she came out, to come out and say, I'm having an issue with myself mentally, people thought mental illness equals crazy. When she came out, was able to see, okay, no, you're not crazy. You're just having anxiety, high stress, what you need help with. So I'm wondering, is it more because it's more normalized now to come out and say, I do need this help?
I think that with COVID, there's a lot of different things. I do believe that, yes, I do believe that we are in a space today where it is a lot more normalized and there's less stigma attached to seeking therapy. I think that also we were kind of stuck home with not a whole lot to do, and that just gave us some time. I think that being able to move to telehealth made therapy more accessible. I had stated earlier that for a good few months during the pandemic, insurance companies had actually waived copayments for treatment. So I think that there were a lot of different factors that played into it that allowed people to say, you know what, I think this is a good time to go. I think that, you know, I think Simone Biles, her saying it, and I think it was the other young lady, the tennis player. Naomi Osaka.
Naomi Osaka.
What they did was in response to sort of this space that we're in, you know, because I have been seeing a shift for a while, for, you know, a while before they even said anything. I think that they are responding to this time that we're in as well.
Okay.
I have another question for you.
Okay.
I'm going to get slammed with so many questions tonight.
I know a young man that was involved in a car accident where the car accident ended in a fatality, not for them. They get over the stress or the anxiety. Have a regular car accident, you have a certain level of anxiety. You put your foot on the brakes, you start looking back to see, is the person behind you slowing down? That type of thing. But how do you get over when you're dealing with, like, a fatality? Not that you caused it, did happen.
Right. I think that that's something that, again, I want to say this, that's a situation that is highly likely to result in a traumatic response, but it's not 100% guaranteed, right? So that's the first thing, because I don't know who this young man was before this happened. I don't know what strengths he had. I don't know what he was attached to that, you know, I don't know what kind of supports he already had before that, but that's going to play a big part in how well he does after the fact. For the first 30 days after a traumatic event, a single traumatic event like that happens, you are in what's called acute stress. You're dealing with acute stress. And so it's not really, how do I say, it's not really pathological. All the stuff that you just said, you're looking behind you to make sure, you know, that's all normal, right? Like that's a normal response to going through what somebody went through. But I would say that, you know, in the case of a fatality, I would highly encourage that person to seek professional help. And there are a lot of different types of trauma treatment. I am trained in something called EMDR, which is it's a mouthful, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And basically what that does is it helps to reprocess traumatic memories through something called bilateral stimulation. It doesn't matter what that is. It's basically mimics sleep process, but you're not asleep. You ever have something on your mind and then you go to sleep and you wake up and you have a great idea or you have a way to address this thing that was on your mind? That's basically because you go through a REM cycle, and so EMDR just helps to mimic that whole sleep sort of reconciliation that happens, and it helps you to reprocess trauma.
Is it similar to hypnosis?
So with EMDR, you're not asleep. You're just, it's just mimicking that process. You're wide awake. You don't lose consciousness. You know exactly what's going on the whole time. So it's different. It's different from hypnosis in that regard, and in probably some other ways. But I've never actually studied hypnosis, so I couldn't tell you, you know, the exact similarities and differences. But there are different things that you can do. So it's not just, we're not just talking. There's also something called somatic processing, where you're doing different body movements to help you to move the trauma through your body. There are a lot of different trauma treatments that you can do. There's something called cognitive processing therapy, where you're sort of retelling your story. A lot of times we're stuck, when we go through a trauma, we're stuck in a story that's not necessarily complete or true. And so through cognitive processing, you're telling the story fully with all of the pieces that are sort of missing. So there are a lot of different ways that you can work through that. But it's really going to depend on what's going on for this, you know, in the case of the case that you just gave, this person who went through an accident and it was a fatality. You know, I'm wondering if there's any guilt there. I'm just wondering what the story is that this young man is telling himself in regards to the story, in regards to this accident, and that's what we would work on.
Okay, real quick.
Is there any specific?
I'm sorry, hold on, go ahead.
You mentioned specific type of therapist. What type of therapist would they seek underneath the MSW?
I would look for someone who is a. I'm sorry.
Asking if there's a specific type. Yes.
I would look for somebody who is who specializes in trauma, and I would ask them specifically what do they do. You know, what type of trauma treatment do they provide? If they say, oh, I do basic talk therapy, then I would say no. I would say no, don't go to that person. Because it goes a little deeper than that. There are certain things that something like an EMDR there are a lot of different trauma treatments that don't even involve a whole lot of talking because there's a lot of stuff that you may not even remember. You know, there are trauma treatments that involve body movement. Before the pandemic, we used to have, at my practice, we had yoga. We stopped doing it because, obviously, it's an enclosed space and there's a lot of breathing going on, so we're not doing that. We had to shut that down. But it involves, moving your body. And so there are a lot of things that happen. When you go through a traumatic event, in order for you to survive, our brains are so amazing that it actually shuts down a lot of our conscious memory. So there's a lot of things that we don't necessarily have the words for, but we feel it in our bodies. And that's why those types of interventions are really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. 6606, sorry about that. We went to go back in. We were holding on for a while.
So I have a question. Now, I don't, for the amount of years you've been in your practice and everything, and in the light of recent events, have you seen a greater influx of African-American males in your practice or a greater influx of African-American females in your practice? Just curious. Because, again, you know.
Go ahead. Finish. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, it's all right. No, because, again, you know, these things that have been going on, they affect men and women in different ways. And especially when it comes to being African American, it is what it is. So I was just curious if you've seen a greater influx in men as opposed to women, or you know.
Yeah, I would definitely say that I have over the course of my practice period, I have seen an increase in African American people. Period, but I would definitely say that the women are leading the men. I do see both, but I would say that I see black women more than the men. But I will say this, that a lot of the men that are coming in because their women are telling them to go to therapy.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
So,
I do see
both, but I would have to say the women are definitely in the lead. But, I mean, if I'm thinking of some of the people that I have, some of the men that I see right now, one came in because of a female best friend, one came in because of a wife, it's a lot of times because a mom is saying, hey, you need therapy. But they're coming in on their own as well. But, you know, but if I had to give the credit, I would say it's because the women in their lives are saying, hey, this is something you need to do. And they trust and respect the women enough to actually follow through.
Yeah, because you have to, listen, as a black man, we have to be comfortable with that. Because you know what?
Mm-hmm.
Once again, there's a perception of weak. Because, you know, there are women out there, and there are men out there too, but there are women out there, you know, and whether it's relationships or family members, like, oh, why do you want to talk to somebody?
oh, like what was she punking out
for sure.
Or what she can't man up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And see,
oh,
that's
God.
Very discouraging.
It's awful.
And that's the final.
It's
you know, like once you start seeing stuff like that, like then we don't want to even entertain the idea of sitting down and talking to someone, because it's like you're trying to get in my head to the point of what, you know, or you're gonna call me weak, or you're gonna look at me like I'm some little kid or something, and no one, you know, no man, especially a black man, wants to feel that way, especially when we have to go out here in the world, in society, and prove ourselves and deal with the things that we have to deal with, and you know, fight the fights that we have to fight. And then in some cases, there's some of us that just choose to just not fight at all. That just rather sit in front of the TV and just not deal with it. You know, and, you know, I guess for the lack of a better word, just be taken care of. Because, you know, we have, you know, some of us have that little, you know, mommy issue or whatever. And we feel like, you know, oh, I need somebody to take care of me. You know, I feel like, you know, I can't go through this, or I need to be pushed. Or my ego needs to be stroked in order for this to happen. I mean, it's just so much. Like, it's just really, it's a lot. And especially being black. I remember I was reading something from Gene Baldwin. He was saying, like, being black in America is like to be angry all the time.
For sure. For sure.
And it's like, who wants to be angry all the time? But it's a reality, because there's always some type of atrocity. There's always some type of weird look or some different treatment that you get. You know, especially I love it when they say, oh, well, if we use the N-word on each other, why can't we use it? And it's like, really? You know, that's just like you're just going straight from cold water to boiling. Like you just want, you know, you're just looking for a problem. But it
mm-hmm.
seems like the first thing we turn to is aggression, because that's what we're always showing. And it's interesting how their form of aggression could be in a way of, oh, well, you don't fit the criteria for this job, or, oh, you know, this, that, and the third, this person is ahead of you online, or this person is already late. You know, it's these little, like, called microaggressions. And it's like once we pick up on it, we automatically jump to the defensive. And it's like, it's, like you said, either fight or flight.
Yeah.
And most of us choose to fight more than the flight.
It depends, though, that because that response is honestly what we do. It's really chosen in the moment, and we can be conditioned to do certain things. I do agree with you on that, but I think we do. I think we do a lot of different things when it comes to that. You know, I think sometimes we fight. You can either fight, flee, freeze. You know, like there are a lot of different ways to deal with that, and you don't always know what it's going to be. But I know that we do have to, in the back of our minds, we're always aware of our position in this country, right? We know that if we do certain things, it may not – if I do this thing right now in here, it might not work out all that well for me, you know? So we're always trying to weigh and judge what we're going to do and how we're going to do it because of who we are.
I got you. Ms. Cherry has a question, but before Ms. Cherry asks you her question, what I would like you to do, Ms. Beth, if you don't mind – on Facebook. Like I said, we have a Facebook page. Please like and feel free to post any of the information tonight on that page. And also, let's just rock out for the last 5 minutes to, you know, let everybody know about all the services that, you know, are available to you or that you offer.
Okay.
So go ahead, Ms. Cherry.
Hey, I have another question for you. I'm a member of a Facebook community that caters towards minorities on Long Island. And every day I'm on there, I see people asking for black therapists specifically. And there seem to be many people that are getting responses back, responses that are coming through. A lot of them are mentioning that private practice, they don't accept insurance. So you're paying out of pocket, and the costs are extremely high. I'm sure you can imagine. So harder to find a black therapist because it seems like they're not taking insurance,
mm-hmm.
as some of the bigger agencies are.
I mean, I know our agency, we take insurance. Most of my colleagues, they do take insurance. I had stated earlier that there are, you can always go to your insurance. Sometimes they don't break down the clinicians by race. I know some of them do. Sometimes you can go to your insurance and you can ask for a black therapist and they'll give that to you. Sometimes they'll say, oh, we don't ration out professionals based on race. Some do. If you go to a website like Therapy for Black Girls, a lot of the clinicians that are on there, they'll show what insurances they're in network with. I think the bigger issue right now is that there is such a need that most people are just full. You know,
Right.
I think that's probably one of the bigger issues right now because there is such a need and there aren't a whole lot of therapists available. But one thing that telehealth has done is that now I can see somebody in upstate New York if I wanted to because we're doing telehealth. As long as I'm licensed in the state, I can see people all over New York State now. So somebody that's up in Buffalo that may not have been able to have access to a black therapist, now they could because there's telehealth. But, yeah, I mean, my colleagues, a lot of us do take insurance, but we're just full. We're just full.
Are there a lot of black therapists?
I mean, no, there's – it depends what you mean by that. And I think in Long Island there's not a whole lot of us, but we are there. You gotta look. I know what you're talking about with the group on Facebook because I see that too. And there are times where I'll see new names, and I'm writing down the names too because I'm trying to reach out to people and trying to get a little networking group going on for the therapists that are here in Long Island or that serve Long Island. There are a lot of different services that are offered. Some things are, like I have certain services that are covered by insurance and others that are not. My therapy is covered by insurance, though. It is.
You specifically, are you located in Long Island?
I'm in Farmingdale.
You're not too far from me.
Well,
yeah.
What I would like, and no one has any, other questions. Please, we need information. Like you said, whatever website, whatever practices that you are part of or partners that you have, I mean, please, let that information be known, put it out there, knowledge is power. And if we don't know, a lot of times, people just don't ask or don't really think to ask. So, I mean, whatever it is, I mean, please, inform us,
Sure.
Your practice and everything else.
Sure.
Can I just ask you something really quickly before
of course,
that?
Yes.
You mentioned you're a social worker, you're a licensed clinical social worker. What's the difference between you and, say, like a mental health counselor? And I know
it's a different profession. Yeah, it's a different profession. It's just it's a different licensure. But we can both provide therapy here in New York. I think that the social work degree is a little bit more versatile in what we do, but it's an older profession, social work. I think the licensed mental health counselor is that profession is probably about maybe 10 or 15 years old, as opposed to social work being probably about 100 years old or more than that. So, yeah, but we can both practice therapy. We can both do therapy.
Thank you.
So Broad Hollow Psychotherapy is my practice, and we are located on Broad Hollow Road in Farmingdale, and I'm the owner of the practice, and I am the one that focuses on trauma recovery. We have a couple of different therapists that do trauma work. The website is BroadHollowPsychotherapy.com, and if you wanted to get in touch with me, if you want to get in touch with me via email, you can email me at Sherry, S-H-E-R-I, at BroadHollowPsychotherapy.com. I do, unfortunately, have to say that I don't have any openings at the moment. We do have some clinicians with limited spots available. We have Shaniqua Lee, she's going to be starting up couples therapy probably within the next month or two. We have Victor Brown. He is the person who sees adolescent boys. So, and talking about males, his practice is focusing on young men and adolescents. Well, children, adolescent, young adult males specifically. And so he's got a lot of clients that he sees. And I also do something called Reiki, which is sort of like an energy sort of hands-off massage that I do, that I use in helping with treating anxiety. That it's not a therapy, and that's something that is not covered by insurance. And that was something that I stopped doing because of the pandemic, but now that's something that I'm starting up again. I believe that talk therapy is one pathway to healing, but it is not the only pathway to healing. As I stated before, I do something called EMDR. We had yoga. Hopefully at some point we'll be able to bring that back in, because moving your body is an important part of the healing process. Talking is definitely important, but sometimes we don't always have the words. Someone had asked about, well, what if things don't necessarily work? We're not always going to be the right fit. When you're looking for a therapist, try to find somebody that you really gel with. There's nothing wrong with trying out different therapists. You know, there's nothing wrong with making sure that you feel comfortable talking to this person that you're going to be telling, you know, the intimate details of your life. You know, I think it's important personally. I think it's important that your therapist have been in therapy. I don't think that there's anything wrong with, while you're vetting your therapist, asking, hey, have you ever been in therapy? I've been in therapy, and I will go to therapy anytime I need to, you know, because it's important for me to be, first of all, it's important for me to walk the walk, right? If I'm gonna ask you to do something, then I should at least have done the same thing for myself. If I'm saying that it's important for you to be mentally well, it's also important for me to be mentally well. So that's something that's really important. But anyway, it's important for you. It's important for you to find somebody that you really feel like is a good fit for you. It's also important to make sure that the person that you're going to is skilled in the thing that you're looking for. So you can ask people questions. Okay, I know that you are a therapist, but do you have any particular certifications? Are you trained in any particular approach? What type of approaches do you use? Do you have experience working with this particular diagnosis? So, you know, all of those things are really important. So that's something that if someone is not willing to answer those questions, then you might want to continue your search.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Okay, and I also, you know, want to throw your TED Talk in there. What is it called? Know Your Aces? Yes.
Know Your Aces,
Beth, yes, did a TED Talk, which I like very much, and I'm sure you would like it too. Check it out. It is on YouTube. It's called Know Your Aces, Sherrianne Best TED Talk. And, you know, check it out. Ms. Best, I want to thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It has been an extreme pleasure. It's been very enlightening, this whole, like, conversation. You know, it just makes you feel full. You know, I mean, in some cases, you know, you get some of the stuff off your chest and your shoulder, but at the same time, it gives you, you know, more to think about. But, and you have really done that. But you kind of, you know, for me, you took that little, like, I guess that removed that myth of, like, oh, you know, therapy is only for certain types of people, like strong people can't do that. Like, you know, it's for any and everyone. And, you know, once again, I just, you know, want to thank you for breaking it down. You know, I know there's a lot more to it that we, you know, didn't get to cover. But, you know, this was a very interesting 2 hours.
Absolutely.
Ms. Best, we want to wish you all the best. And like I said, feel free to post up anything, you know, on, you know, anything that you're going on, anything that you're doing, you know, on the menu page. And, you know, yeah. You know,
I certainly will. Thank you so much. No, this was amazing. It really was. And I love talking about this. And it's just so, it's something that's so important. And I'm hoping that, you know, if I could just have one person to consider, hey, maybe I do need to go talk to somebody, or maybe I do need to go work something out. It's definitely my pleasure to be able to do that. So thank you for the opportunity. And it's been, it really has been great. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, and yeah, once welcome. Again, thank you for calling, and I hope, you know, we can set it up and, you know, do it again, you know, sometime in the near future. Ms. Cherry, Mika, you know, sorry, once again, 6606, sorry, Mr. Cole, Red, and everyone, have a great night, and, you know, you can always, you know, revisit this episode, you know, on Blog Talk Radio if there's any information that you missed, you know. All episodes are definitely archived. So, to everyone out there across the globe that's been listening, thank you very much. You guys have a blessed night. Stay safe and, you know, be well and be human. And good night, everyone.
Good night, guys, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Safe.
Have a great week.
Good night.
All right, take care. Bye.